Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 165, recorded Friday, July 17th, 2020. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast. First, post-lockdown flight, and when does business travel come back? Coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios in Chicago, Illinois, after a couple of runs back down to Nashville for family stuff, one in the air and the other on the ground. And with COVID cases spiking in vacation spots like California and South Florida, it seems like that's the market segment, folks traveling to see friends and family. That's the segment that the airlines and hotel companies are banking on. And that's most of what I saw when flying back from Nashville a few Thursdays ago. Lots of families with kids, groups of people meeting up on the other side of security for, I don't know, maybe some four-day weekend trips. The tip-off for me on that business versus leisure traveler mix was the TSA lines. Solid lines for regular TSA, while I pretty much walked straight through pre-check. Another tip-off used to be midday lines at the bars, but with most of the airport restaurants closed up, that's not so much a valid indicator anymore. Traveling right now requires a bit of nimbleness. On my first post-lockdown trip in May, the workout room at the Spring Hill Hampton Inn was open, and I used it every day. Head back down in June, there's a piece of paper taped to the door, closed by order of the health department. The front desk agent told me it was a couple of days old, which explained all the banging in the room above me. Somebody must have been doing their HIIT workout, high-intensity interval training. I don't know if I should have been annoyed or impressed at how long they went at it. So for this last trip, I called the hotel the night before I left, before I packed my gym clothes versus a yoga mat. They told me they just reopened the workout room the day before, so the yoga mat went back in the closet. It's kind of the same fluid situation right now with bars and restaurants. A few days before we got to Nashville, the mayor closed down any establishment with less than 50% of their sales in food, so pretty much all the bars and tap rooms. Makes sense, not arguing it, just forced us to pivot quickly some of our plans. It also forced us to go a bit old school, back to making actual phone calls, asking, "Are you open? Dine-in or just takeaway?" Since places seem to be having trouble updating their websites and their Facebook, Yelp, Google, OpenTable listings fast enough to keep up with the changes. It did prove out our decision to book the Residence Inn rather than the mainline Marriott a few blocks away. The full-size fridge in the Residence Inn held a hell of a lot more beer, and that kitchenette came in handy when we found out that Prince's Hot Chicken was only doing takeaway. I just can't imagine trying to eat an extra hot half chicken perched on a king-size bed. So following up, lots has been written about how the COVID pandemic has massively accelerated changes toward contactless transactions. You know, Microsoft CEO famously said back in April during their Q1 earnings call, "We've seen 2 years worth of digital transformation in 2 months." Well, back in episode 136, I had said that I felt like the last generation of cash payers, that my younger colleagues rarely carried cash, that they paid for everything with a card. Now, looking in my wallet, I had the same $200 worth of 20s in June that I had taken out of an ATM in March. Nobody wants to handle cash. They don't even want to handle my card. Most extreme experience, a bartender at Asgard's Brewing tap room in Columbia, Tennessee, sprayed my Visa card with diluted chlorine bleach before swiping it to pay my bill. Made my wallet smell like a swimming pool. But as much as possible, these places want us to pre-order and prepay, so we just pick up our purchases in a socially distanced way and then head home. It's also switched up opinions on facial recognition for flight check-ins. Pre-coronavirus, the push was from governments as a better way to do security screenings and to improve immigration compliance. And As you'd imagine, this was getting big pushback on privacy concerns. Now, though, it's pivoted. The push is from travel companies using facial recognition as a way to provide touchless check-in, and that's what most travelers want now. But facial recognition is stymied by face masks, which we wear when we're checking in at airports and hotel lobbies, as is Face ID when trying to unlock my iPhone to get my boarding pass or a digital room key. Until I can downgrade to an iPhone SE that has the old-school Touch ID that unlocks with my thumbprint, which doesn't have a mask on it, I think I'm going to have to shorten the PIN code on my iPhone 11 Pro. I lengthened it, you know, a couple of years ago for better security, but I'm banging it in more and more often now that Face ID is failing. And I've noticed that the iPhone is really slow about recognizing my number presses, or it misses some when I go too fast, like when I'm trying to pull up a boarding pass in line and then errors out. It's really kind of frustrating. Walking down the Hertz five-star aisle in Nashville Airport, I saw their version of the old paper rings that hotels used to put around toilet seats to certify that they'd been cleaned. Now, in Hertz's case, it's not a paper ring, but they've got this Hertz gold standard clean sticker that goes across the driver's side center pillar. That's the B pillar for all my gearhead listeners, so that you break it when you open the driver door to get in. Nice gesture, but it kept me from doing my usual walk down the aisle, opening the door of a bunch of cars to check their mileage. Seemed, I don't know, it just seemed a bit rude to break all those stickers, though I did notice more than a few broken ones when I was choosing my car. Now, way back in the old days of Travel Commons, we used to talk about the TSA doing security theater in the screening lines. This thing with Hertz feels a little bit like sanitation theater. I finally broke down and bought a new set of Bose noise-canceling headphones, the new 700s. Now, this is my third set of Bose cans. I bought my first pair in 2009. I was flying a lot of short flights at the time, and in those days, before everything had switched to regional jets, I was on a lot of prop planes. And those things are noisy, not just on takeoff, but the entire flight. And after a while, I was starting to notice fatigue when getting off those planes. Talking to a few folks, they said that prop noise really heightens stress. One of the guys, a friend, told me how much he really liked his Bose headphones. So I burnt some Amex membership rewards points on Amazon for a pair of what was then current, the Quiet Comfort 2s. It was a revelation. And I've talked about this before. Flick that switch and whoosh, just quiet. I took them on every flight until 3 years later, I left them in a seat back pocket while rushing off a plane to make a tight connection. So I immediately lit up some more membership rewards points for a new pair, this time the QC15s. 4 years later, I actually ended up having to replace a worn-out set of ear cushions. And though the non-replaceable headband cushion is looking pretty ratty now, these now 8-year-old headphones, they still work great. But what got me to replace them was the wire. I'd be sitting in my usual aisle seat, plugged into my iPhone, using one of those dongles that Apple no longer gives you with a new phone. At some point in the flight, the guys in the middle and window seats would want to get up and use the toilet. And inevitably, when I'd be standing up, I'd snag that Bose wire on the arm of the seat, which would then I'd end up either pulling the headphones off my head or launching my phone at least one or two rows up. I could have gotten a pair of the QC35s, sort of same form factor as the QC15s, but without the wire. But I just decided to go all next generation with the 700s, which has meant some adjustment pains. Like, there are buttons in places where they never had them before. So when I grab the ear cups to slip the headphones off, I manage to hit a button that changes the noise reduction level or somehow summons Siri. Also new is using the touch surface on the right ear cup to control things. You tap or swipe the right ear cup to accept or drop a call, pause a song, raise or lower the volume, or skip 30 seconds to fast forward past a podcast ad. I'm learning to be a bit more precise with my motions. I've already dropped a couple of calls when I was just trying to turn down the volume. One thing I really like, more from working at home than in flight usage, is that the 700s can pair with two Bluetooth devices at the same time. So for me, I've paired them with my MacBook Air and my iPhone, and the headphones just switch seamlessly between the two. It's nice when I've got Zoom calls on my Mac and then a regular phone call comes in on my iPhone. And I don't know, call me shallow, but the 700s just look cooler than my old QC15s or the QC35s. I've had the 700s for about a month now, and I really like them. I guess you could say they are Travel Commons approved. And hey, if you've got any travel stories, comments, questions, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. Post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or Instagram page at Travel Commons. Or you can post the comments on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is first post-lockdown flight. Way back at the beginning of the lockdown, the first Saturday of April, I was on a Zoom beer drinking call with Rob Cheshire, a longtime Travel Commons listener, and now actually a podcaster. So longtime listener, new podcaster. He interviews UK craft brewers on his This Week in Craft Beer podcast. Anyhow, it was a Saturday afternoon call, actually, for Rob and the other guys in London. It was just past noon for me in Chicago. But hey, it was after 5 o'clock somewhere around the world, and somewhere around our second or third beer, Rob asked me, when will you be comfortable getting on a plane again? I really didn't have a good answer. It was early days in the lockdown, and I just wasn't sure. But fast forward to the back half of June, I needed to get down to Nashville again, and I didn't have time to burn 8 hours on the drive down and another 8 on the ride back. I had some travel funds sitting in my Southwest account from a couple of April trip cancellations. And Southwest flies 6 nonstop 737s, you know, full-size planes between Chicago and Nashville, while American United only do smaller regional jets. And Southwest isn't packing them full. They say they're booking these bigger planes at only two-thirds capacity, while American and United say they'll let you know if they book your flight full. So all told, it was a pretty easy decision to fly Southwest. It's one of the benefits, maybe one of the few benefits of living in Chicago. It's a rare three-hub town. Now, the day before the flight, when getting my boarding pass on the Southwest app, my usual process, I was contactless before it was a thing, I had to click through a certification that I wasn't running a temperature and that I hadn't been exposed to or tested positive for COVID-19. Well, okay, click. Then I get a screen telling me that face masks are required to board the plane. Makes sense. Click. And now I get my boarding pass. Monday morning, Irene drops me off at a pretty sedate departures curb at Midway. I mask up and walk in. It's not empty, but it's definitely not the normal Monday morning bustle. Feels more like a Wednesday sort of early afternoon in early autumn after the kids have all gone back to school. There's a bit of a line at the regular security, but no line at pre-check. The TSA agent asked me to drop my mask for a moment to check my ID and then waves me through. I noticed the TSA still had their October 2020 Real ID deadline warning signs on the podium. But I remember reading at the end of March that the TSA had pushed that deadline a year to October 2021. Guess they hadn't had a chance to issue new updated signs, though you'd think they would have just taken the old ones down. Most of the restaurants and stores were closed when I walked into the terminal, kind of a pretty common situation. Kev Monteith, a Travel Commons listener and Amtrak travel blogger, replied to one of my tweet posts about this trip saying, "Hey, I flew Southwest a few weeks ago. Layovers are rough because most of the places in the airports are closed. I was in St. Louis and only found beer at Burger King and Dunkin' Donuts. You know, I would have been happy just with a coffee." Down in the main Southwest concourse, some of the gates were actually closed off with curtains, which I assume was to keep people from sitting there so that they didn't have to go and clean them. looking around the terminal, I felt like mask usage was at about 80%. Just about everybody was wearing them when walking around. I'd see some people not wearing them when sitting at the gate, but, you know, most of those folks were distancing themselves from everybody else. I would see kids ripping their masks off as soon as they got off the jetway. I did notice, though, a sizable minority of mask wearers were just covering their mouths, leaving their noses uncovered. You know, pilots, cleaning crews, as well as passengers and, you know, some of the wheelchair porters. Now, I'm definitely not an epidemiologist. I don't even play one on TV. But that, you know, not covering the nose, that seems to sort of defeat the purpose. Anyhow, when the agent called boarding, she said, there's 40 of you on this plane, and it's got 175 seats, so everyone gets their own row, and please, don't everyone sit up front. We need a bit of weight distribution. It was a quick boarding with only 40 of us. We pushed back and took off early. Another sign that these are truly unprecedented times. Nashville was more crowded on Thursday morning when I was heading back home, mostly families, as I said at the top of the show. The end of the concourse where the Southwest gates are was as crowded as usual. There were signs around saying that three seats between people equals 6 feet, but there were way too many people to make that practical. At least everyone was masked up, though. I actually ended up walking back up the terminal to find a bit more space, and there, tucked behind some construction sheeting, I found an empty gate. I was all alone. I was mega social distanced. So I take off my mask, I log into the Wi-Fi, do a little bit of work until the Southwest app on my phone bings telling me that the boarding has begun. Now, there were a lot more than 40 people on this flight. I found an empty row, slid all the way over to the window seat since it's only a 90-minute flight. About 3 minutes later, a guy sat down in the aisle seat. There's nobody in the middle seat. Everybody's wearing masks. Nobody's head is right next to mine, so I'm good to go. Maybe helped just a little bit by the fact in those three intervening minutes, I had pointed all three air jets toward the empty middle seat and turn them on full blast, creating an air curtain between me and whoever was going to sit in that aisle seat. You know, just in case. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is, when does business travel come back? Now, earlier this week, my son Andrew and his girlfriend took the 6 a.m. flight to LaGuardia. I asked him, how full was the flight? Maybe 20 people, mostly families, he said. Didn't surprise me that a Thursday 6 a.m. LaGuardia flight was only at, say, 11% capacity. That is normally a business travel run. People getting up at sort of dark 30 in Chicago to make a 10 a.m. meeting in Manhattan. But there's not many business travelers now. While business travelers only make up, say, 10% of the passenger load for major airlines, they provide between 55 and 75% of the profits. You might could think they're subsidizing the budget fares that those families are using. Now, over the past month, I've been talking with some sales VPs that I know at companies that deliver sort of complex IT services. I mean, if anyone would feel the bite of not traveling, I thought it would be these guys. I've done a number of these deals, and they've always involved kind of corralling all the right decision makers and locking them into a conference room to hash out all the contract details and then ride herd over the transition. But I was completely wrong. All these guys told me that work hasn't slowed down during the lockdown. They've been able to do all their conference room work over Zoom. Indeed, they said being virtual has actually made it easier for them. Pre-lockdown, one of their biggest challenges was just calendar wrangling, being able to get all their execs and the client execs into that conference room at the same time. Now they just click some buttons and everybody shows up in Zoom gallery mode. No travel planning, no scrambling after canceled or delayed flights. They all said they love the ease of virtual meetings, and at the end of the day, they love closing the lid on their laptops and having dinner with their family every night. So that kind of supports the narrative going around that business travel will never rebound. Kind of twisting that Microsoft CEO quote, in 2 months, we've advanced 2 years in virtual work culture. But when I probed a bit, I found that Zoom hasn't completely replaced an airplane ticket. While these guys have been able to virtually close deals that they had in their sales funnel, virtual meetings don't seem to be replacing these deals. They don't seem to be able to get new prospects into the top of the sales funnel on Zoom. So while things are looking good now, these guys are beginning to worry about their sales 4 to 6 months from now. This is actually the exact opposite of what I'd expected. I thought that the give and take of negotiations, the sidebar conversations, all that emotional content wouldn't translate into video calls. But it looks like I was wrong, that once a deal has some momentum and some structure to guide everyone, those in-person hammering out sessions turns out that's just a nice to have. And the reason that new opportunities aren't coming in is that, well, those are different sets of conversations, more exploratory, abstract, just sort of wide-ranging conversations that lack that guiding structure, and also that you're selling your team as much as a product, at least for these complex services, and that's tough to do through a pane of glass. And so all these guys said that they'll probably start traveling again, reluctantly, at the end of this month. But I do think this, I don't know, call it a four-month exercise in figuring out virtual work methods and cultures, is actually going to move the set point. Everybody's default decision is going to be now toward virtual meetings. And so maybe the airlines and hotels are going to have to be a bit less focused on those high-profit road warriors and a little bit more dependent on those cost-conscious families. Does this mean, I don't know, repointing the 6 a.m. LaGuardia flights down to Cancun? I don't know. But if that's the case, I do know that they're going to have to seriously re-engineer those drink carts. All right, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 165. I hope you all enjoyed the show and hope you all decide to stay subscribed. You can find the Travel Commons podcast on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, and Spotify. The links along with the RSS feeds are on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. Right below that in the social media section are the links to the Travel Commons Facebook page and Twitter and Instagram feeds. If you've already subscribed, I really appreciate it if you would take a couple minutes and leave a review on one of these sites, wherever you happen to listen to us. And as always, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons page on Facebook or the Travel Commons Instagram site, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. I really appreciate it. And until we talk next time, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.